First of all, we're here in Wingham and we're joined once again by the chair of Wingham Beef Week and also the general manager of Wingham Beef Exports, Grant Coleman. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Country Hour again.
Good afternoon, Michael. Thank you. And thank you for being at Wingham.
Now, we've actually, it's bigger and better than last year. So I don't know how you did it because it was pretty huge last year. But you've got more entries, more people, more activity.
Yeah, this year I think we got 30 schools in total this year, up on four schools from last year, 521 students, which is over 100 more than last year, and 270-odd cattle. So, yeah, no, a great achievement for the committee and to all the schools and all the producers that's turned up.
So it's an educational process in terms of breeding and also in terms of putting Wingham on the map too, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we really concentrate on that education side of things, right from the producers, the children, and even with the plant across the road, the children get to come across the plant and look at the carcasses once they've been judged live here. So, you know, that's the main thing we really look at.
Okay, so now in terms of the organisation, I think last year you were saying you've nearly a capacity, but you've stretched it another 100.
Yeah, that's right. And like at the end of the day, you know, we kind of have it as an open, you know, anyone wants to nominate, they can come kind of thing. And we had a look at it and we all thought, oh, let's give it a go. You know, 521 children, we think we can do it. And went into the second day and yesterday went very well. So all going good.
And what's the feedback you get from the teachers about what the kids are learning?
Oh, look, the biggest thing here at Wingham is, and as we said last year, you know, the children come here, it's a week of education, you know, from live animals judging, and then we do the ICMJ as well, and then once the cattle are processed, we go down and do the carcass judging as well. So, you know, that's more or less right through the whole system that the children can see, you know, what happens and learn a hell of a lot what happens in the industry.
And how does it benefit the industry and how does it benefit exports?
Oh,
it
definitely benefits the industry. You know, a lot of these children end up in university and do a lot of different judging. And, you know, I know a lot in the last 32 years from Wingham Beef Week here, a lot of the children have actually ended up in the industry, running plants, plant managers, and in the sales teams and for a lot of different companies, which is great to see.
And we're also going to be talking about chefs and the food industry as well. We'll be talking to one of your homegrown chefs shortly on the program as well. And in terms of your own business, I mean, going from strength to strength, and you tell us about the President's Medal. You didn't win it, but you were there. You were in the finals.
Yeah, President's Medal. It was an amazing event to be involved in. Like 5,500 entries that started off, and we got down to the top six in the event. And we actually ended up taking the Innovation Award, which is you know, a great achievement, especially for the plant and for the people that work here and all our producers and the local town.
And there's a lot to it in terms of actually in the prize and the, you know, that whole sort of triple bottom line or quadruple bottom line. You know, that's so it's not easy to win that award or even get close.
Definitely, that's right. You know, your meat wins the first judge, and that's how good the product is in the Menning Valley and what we put to the judges, and win the Fine Food Award for the beef to start with, and then, you know, then it's a long process of judging at the plant, over the phone, right through the whole system, you know, days on days, to get to where we got to. So,
and is there are there particular breeds that Wingham Beef Export favours? Are we talking about Angus mainly or Hereford? What do you look at mainly?
Oh, look, we have an Angus program as well, mainly on the grain fed, long fed products. But majority of our Menning Valley Natural is a British breed animal, and we do that here because we have a lot of producers have a small lots of cattle. And that's why we didn't stipulate when we started in 2011, you know, keep it to that British breed and underpinned by the MSA, and that's where we're at the moment.
And we've seen some Wagyu's been in the news because of some record prices and that sort of thing. You're going to start looking at them and getting them? I mean, I know you've got Japanese partners, so that they'd have some interest in the Wagyu, I would imagine.
Oh, definitely. They, you know, we do Wagyu at our other plants, but it was a nice price for that beast the other day.
$280,000, a record, and then for the semen was 26,000. Yeah. That was a huge amount of money.
Huge amount of money, definitely, definitely. And you know, Wagyu goes from strength to strength. You know, especially on the Asian market. You know, that good Wagyu, there's always a market for it.
Mm. Yeah, and so, but it's not something you're going to look at for here necessarily.
No, not at the moment. majority of our product here is grass-fed beef. You know, we do a small percentage of grain-fed, but we concentrate on the grass-fed beef.
Okay. And Michael Cavanagh wants to ask you something as well, I think.
And Grant, actually, interesting enough, we're just briefly on the Wagyu, and I believe, what was it, the Speckled Park, and we've seen some Speckled Park here this week, but there was a bit of consternation. I think, was it in Queensland, the beast that did very well there? People thought it was Wagyu, but in fact it was Speckled Park, and we've seen them turning up this week at Wingham Beef Week.
Yeah, definitely, Michael. You know, the Speckled Park's one of them great breeds, and, you know, they marble well, and, you know, turn out some great steaks, and... Yeah, and you know, a lot of people get asked the questions, and some of them Speckled Parks are really good cuts of beef.
With the beef here and most of the schools, it's been not only increase in numbers of the schools, but you talk to the schools that have been here previously, they've turned up with extra beasts. You would have thought that with the conditions, and you're seeing it every day with Wingham Beef Exports, are you surprised that... Given the conditions, and we'll be talking to people who have come from Narromine, very badly hit by the drought, are you surprised that you were not only able to get the numbers up, but the qualities remain?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, and it's like Sydney Royal a few weeks ago. The quality of the beef was amazing, and same here. We've got some amazing meat cattle that's going to be judged over the next few days. And, you know, it's tough out there in the whole area. And, you know, on the coast here, we've been a bit luckier than the west. We've had, you know, a bit more rain. There's a bit of green grass here where you look out west where a lot of people are feeding. But, you know, the schools and the producers that come to these events do an amazing job with their cattle.
Are the conditions impacting on Wingham beef exports as well? You're tracking numbers, okay?
Yeah, well, numbers are okay at the moment, but, you know, we're all concerned, you know. Everybody needs rain, everybody needs grass, and we're not looking now, we're looking at the long term of the whole industry, and that's the scary part at the moment.
You're a big fan of the Manning Valley, and you talk it up a lot, and the idea of Wingham Beef is to get the kids to understand that it's not just going back on the farm. There's other, last night, for example, one of the high schools supplied the vegetables. Are you trying, are people, like when you go to Sydney and you're talking, whether it be head office or other people in Sydney, are they aware of the product?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, even all our visitors from overseas, you know, China and Japan and all the Asian market, they're looking all the time to see what's in the Manning Valley. You know, you have a lot of different things other than beef, you know, the vegetables you talk about. You know, I think we still have some of the best oysters in the town. So
I've got to ask you though, your other life, when you're not wearing the cap either as the chair of Wingham Beef Week or running as general manager of Wingham Beef Exports, you came second last year, if I recall correctly, in the World Barbecue titles. This year you went back to Texas and competed, didn't do as well, but still held it up. And standing behind you is the chef that put on dinner last night. It was tomahawks. They're a big beast of meat. Would you put those in your slow and low smoker?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Look, the steak last night was pretty amazing, what Michael cooked, and we'll talk a bit more later, but yeah, definitely put them in the reverse serum in the smoker and probably come out a little bit better than last night.
And just very briefly.
big call.
And he's standing right behind you. A very brave man there, Grant. On just really briefly, you've taken Angus 2 years now to Texas, and they're seeing the difference how we feed our beef. Are they asking you more questions about that?
Yeah, they are, definitely. And of course, as you know, we didn't win this year, but I took some briskets and passed them to a mate of mine over there, and he won the competition. And now that we've actually got more and more people starting to ask for the brand over there, I think it's just a bit of difference in our feed and the taste, and they're cooking up very well, so hopefully we can get some more over there.
Well, Grant, we'll let you go, and I'm going to turn up your place sometime. I'd love to see how you do the tomahawks. I've had your others. The tomahawks would be really interesting.
No worries. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Grant. You're listening to The Country. I will come back to Wingham shortly on the program, but first of all, to some other news, to some water news. A New South Wales irrigator spearheading a class action against the Murray-Darling Basin Authority over its alleged water mismanagement says it's a last resort move. The Southern Riverina Irrigators Chairman Chris Brooks is one of less than 10 landholders seeking $750 million in damages in the Supreme Court. They claim they incurred severe financial losses as a result of the Murray-Darling Basin Authority's negligence, which they allege meant 850,000 megalitres of water from the Murray River dams was wasted rather than allocated to their properties. Chris Brooks expects all 2,200 landholders in the Southern Riverina region to join the action, which he says has come out of frustration more than anything else.
We've incurred damages from being allocated zero water allocation in a year when there was, you know, up to 90% capacity in the dams, and this water, this allocation of ours, we claim, was lost from bad management. It's just a straight-out common law negligence claim.
And Chris, what are you seeking exactly in the way of damages?
We're seeking damages for loss of profit. We've tried to negotiate, we've tried to lobby, we've done our best to argue our point that what they're doing with the water is just a waste. There's no benefit for this volume of water that went down the Murray River to the environment. It damaged the environment, it damages our economic capacity, it damages the communities, and there was no need for it, and that's the profits that we would have made had we been given our fair share of allocation.
You've mentioned water allocations. Water allocations are determined by the state, yet this claim is against the federal Murray-Darling Basin Authority. How have you kind of come up with that? Are you using the MDBA as a bit of a scapegoat?
We met with the MDBA and we've got data that we've been collecting for some time over the water that they've lost and the water that they wasted by running those high river flows through the choke was about 850,000 megalitres, which was our allocation. And those losses were credited to our account, even though they were incurred in sending the water down the river. Now, the only reason they needed to send a massive amount down the river is because the same organisation, the MDBA, drained the Menindi Lakes from a flood year 2 years earlier, which was also unnecessary and bad management, we would claim.
Talking about that court case, Chris Brooks from Southern Riverina Irrigators. You're listening. No doubt we'll hear more about that court case into the future. He's expecting about 2,200 people could join into that class action for $750 million in damages. You're listening to The Country Hour. It's coming up to 18 minutes past 12. Well, back here at Wingham. And Michael Finch is a chef who's actually was schooled here at Wingham, did work here as a chef originally, and then worked all around the world and has an amazing track record. But now he's come back and he's joined us here at Wingham Beef Week. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Country Hour.
Great. Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Now, you've gone away and you had a stellar career. Tell us about where it started here, I suppose, at Wingham. You got involved and interested in food here, first of all, I gather.
I think it came from mum and dad and a German father, and he introduced me to the guy that was running the restaurant at the Top Pub. So I did my first year apprenticeship at the Top Pub. Great little restaurant, everything produced there, and it just sort of took off from there.
And then you decided you'd want to try your hand overseas. So where did you start out first of all?
Let's make it brief. From Wingham to Sydney, I was in five-star hotels, finished my apprenticeship. From Sydney to Hayman Island, a year. From Hayman Island to Ireland, I worked in Killarney for a year. From Killarney to London, I was in the Cafe Royal. We got one star, then two Michelin stars. Was there for 3 years. Did a tour of France for a year, so worked all over from Paris to Strasbourg to Nice to Cannes. From there to Northern Italy, from Northern Italy via Singapore back to Melbourne, from Melbourne with Hyatt to Sydney with Marriott, from Marriott then through to Jakarta to a gentleman's club, a very exclusive property that was, then was transferred to open a similar property in Manila. Then from Manila to Saudi Arabia with Rosewood Hotels. We had 26 restaurants within the hotel. We had a kitchen brigade of 200 chefs, a ballroom 100 metres by 100 metres. We could do sit-down functions for 5,000.
Wow, so that's incredible. So, and Michelin stars as well along the way, and how did it open up your eyes when you sort of first saw how those massive kitchens worked? And they had to be not just massive kitchens, but also the innovation involved in them as well. Quite incredible.
I think Michelin star is very detailed and very, very, it can be obsessive. And then you sort of move to a larger kitchen where it's more management, it's more stress management in many ways, where you've got a very large brigade. To come here to Bent on Food in Wingham with Donna, it's just amazing to see, first of all, what she's done since she's been here in terms of promoting local produce and then working together with suppliers and providers, and also Grant in terms of the beef that we're using. The grass-fed beef that we have on the menu now is of quality that I've not seen in a long, long time. And I've cooked beef from all corners of the globe. I think I was sort of adding up last night since I've been there. I've cut, trimmed and cooked between 500 and 600 Scotch fillets. And the product that I'm getting from the boning room, there are no scars. The packaging is fantastic. The age that I have on the product when it comes to me is perfect. So, you know, you can't really... it's very difficult to not cook it well.
And I guess it has the whole standard in Australia improved as well as a result? Have you seen that since you've been away and come back?
Absolutely. And, I mean, I can see why a lot of Australian beef is exported, because the quality that I've cooked from Argentina, from the States, from Europe, from South Africa, generally nowhere near meets the consistency that we actually have here and what I'm cooking now at Benton Food with Donna.
And is it because mainly the grass-fed variety? Is that where we excel in Australia?
I think with what we're doing here at Wingham and what Grant's focused on, the grass-fed product is amazingly flavoursome. It's incredibly consistent. I love the grain-fed stuff, but I think as an all-rounder, the grass-fed stuff is, you know, top of the range, and like I said, as good as I've seen anywhere in the world.
Now, you mentioned that when you get in the star game and the Michelin game, it can get a bit obsessive and a little bit crazy and, you know, out there. So is it good to actually come back to your roots and come back to the seasonal produce and, you know, those basic dishes?
Absolutely. I mean, I've worked with some very, very crazy ones that have TV shows and shout and scream and swear. And it's not...
Not naming anyone.
No, let's not. And also his boss who trained him. And I think, you know, to come back and to really focus on what's seasonal, what's local, wherever we can, is wonderful. And it's come a long, long way in the last 10 or 15 years. And, you know, to full credit of people like Grant and of Donna Carrier for really evolving this process and focusing on the local produce that we have around here.
Do you need, when you are the head chef and that you are the sort of figurehead, do you need to scream and shout and go crazy to get the best out of your staff, or is it counterproductive?
It's counterproductive, I think. I've gone through that phase in my career, and I've worked with those and I learnt from them, and you sort of learn what not to do, and I don't think it's necessary. Very, very rarely I raise my voice, and it's just... Yeah, people get confused, people get nervous, and that's not really what you need.
And a bit of a time waster too, and gets people's mind off the job, I think, as well.
That's right, exactly. It's just another distraction in a very, very busy area that you don't need when, you know, there are sharp knives and hot pans around.
And then people get angry and things happen, and yeah, I bet you've seen a fair bit of that in your time.
I have a scar or two that I could, that I could show, yeah.
Yeah, well, and in terms of what you've seen since you've come back, so what it was like when you left in terms of Wingham, the town, and the produce to now, how would you describe that change?
I think there are a lot of local growers around Les and Annette, the edible forest. There's some great stuff going up in Elands. And that was never really around when I was here. It was just, you know, generalised stuff coming up from Sydney. There was no specifics, and there was not a great deal of passion when it came to produce. What I see now in Wingham, once again referring back to Grant and Donna, is the amount of passion and the amount of variety that we have. Fruit, vegetables, meat, oysters. It's just amazing, and this did not exist when I was a kid.
And I guess that's why you've come back and you brought your family as well, because it's difficult. You were just saying it's difficult living in Asia. It's difficult travelling the world and those sort of things. And Australia is a much better place to live, let's face it.
Absolutely. I mean, we were in a congested Asian city. We have an 11-year-old boy. He's cricketing and soccering and futsaling and excelling at school. My wife's doing aged care. We also have a mobile salon. So we've sort of started up afresh here. And, you know, it's all about the family. It's all about the country. Ethics, and that's what we love about it.
Fantastic. Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us on the Country Hour today.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Michael Finch there talking about, well, five-star restaurants and all number of changes that he's seen here in regards to Wingham here at Wingham Beef Week. You're listening to the New South Wales Country. It's the 32nd annual Wingham Beef Week, in fact, and it's the biggest one ever, and the greatest number of school kids here, greatest number of schools, and it's absolutely amazing to see the interest here this year up another notch from last year. On the Country Hour, it's 26 minutes past 12. We'll be heading to some news headlines shortly, but before we do that, let's talk AI. And with us now is Stephen Brown, who's from Noble AI. He also teaches at TOCAL as well, and you're looking at, I suppose, expanding and helping people with AI, because it's something that it's not accessible to everybody.
That's right, and it's great to be here. Thanks, Michael. My wife and I have just, in the proceeds of just about building or finishing building an AI training facility here in the Menning Valley on our property at Burrell Creek. Should be up and running by the middle of July. Very excited to bring lots of people to the Menning Valley to teach them artificial insemination. It's a very important job. When you replace the bull, to change over to AI, you have to be, I believe, you have to be trained correctly. And that's my job as a trainer. So, yeah, I can't wait to train out of this new facility.
So you're also involved in training others at TOCAL and formerly at TAFE. You saw a gap in the market. You saw there wasn't it wasn't accessible to everybody?
No, just harder to get onto host farms. In the past, I've used dairy farms. They've always got lots of cold cows, reasonable facilities. Not every farmer likes strangers coming onto their property to put their hand up the rear end of their cow over a period, over three consecutive days. So I've made a decision where I'm going to run it all by myself on our own property. I can control it, and it's just going to be a good outcome.
So you supply the cow, you supply the bull semen as well. So that makes it less messy. You don't need to worry about biosecurity issues on moving around on farms, moving animals from one farm to another, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's correct. I still have to be aware of that. When strangers come onto my or students coming onto my property, we've got to go through that dipping of their boots, dipping of the boots before they leave in iodine. It's all about hygiene, disease-free. So as a trainer, I've got to think of the welfare of the cow. So I have to go through an animal ethics program every year. So I'm very conscious of the animal, make sure the students aren't too rough, make sure the cows have got plenty of water, shade and food during those 3 days of training. So, yeah.
And you also have to keep the animals safe, but keep the students safe, keep the farmers safe, everyone involved. So you've got your own facility to hold them in there, and I've seen some pictures of that. So you're careful about that as well.
Yeah, look, I can't wait. I've got a fellow building it at the moment, and he's come up with some great ideas. It's going to be ease of use, safe, and good for the students, and we'll get a good outcome from it.
Because if you go on a farm, there's no guarantees. Things might not be particularly safe. The cows moving around all over the place. People get stepped on, they get kicked, that sort of thing.
Yeah, look, it hasn't happened as yet, but it could happen. So that's why I've gone down this path of my wife and I have built this facility. So, yeah, we don't want any accidents, and we want to make sure it's safe for everyone.
Now, you say you've got, over the years, you've collected supplies from many years, like 30 years, 30-year-old semen and that sort of thing. We saw recently some stories about some Merino rams that the semen was 60 years old and still going strong, and that would be the case with the bull semen as well.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of semen stored in tanks all around Australia. There's probably semen there been in tanks for 25, 30 years. If it's been stored correctly, you can take it out of the tank, out of the liquid nitrogen, thaw it out in the correct temperature, and basically it comes back to life, and you should get a good conception rate with it.
So do you focus on beef or dairy or both?
Both, Michael, yep. I do a lot of work with the dairy farmers in the area, beef producers. I travel all around New South Wales, a bit into Queensland. I can go out and do big jobs, like I've got a customer out in Glen Innes. I go out there every year. They inseminate 1,500 cows. So they call me up. It takes about 5 days. We do about 250 a day. And I enjoy doing that sort of thing. I love helping farmers to help them get their cows and calf.
And we, it makes me wonder why, that obviously they do it with the stock horses, the AI, but they don't for the thoroughbreds, and they might be trying to keep the price of the joining up a bit for some of those thoroughbred sires, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know a lot about horses, but that is the reason. Yeah.
So that reduces the supply because there's only a certain number of mares that can be covered.
That's right. Yep.
With AI, there's a lot. The sky's the limit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, look, one collection of a semen collection from a bull, you can probably use enough there to inseminate, I think, around 300 cows.
Yep.
Probably more. Depends on the fertility of that bull.
Well, thanks very much for joining us on the program, telling me about that the AI program you're setting up. Thanks for that.
And can I just say one thing? My wife and I just like to, part of our sponsorship for Beef Week this year, we'd like to donate a free AI course on the value of $800. So
so that's one of the prizes here at Beef Week.
Yes, yeah. So anyone, all the students or the spectators, I think it's going to be drawn out on Thursday. You can go down to the merchandise room and put your name on a ticket, and it'll be drawn on Thursday. So open to anyone, any age. So, yep.
Okay, Stephen, thanks for that.
Thank you very much.
Stephen Brown, you're listening to The Country Hour and talking AI there. But right now it's 28 minutes to one. It's time to get some news headlines.
Good afternoon, Michael. An irrigators group from southern New South Wales has lodged a class action against the Murray-Darling Basin Authority. Southern Riverina Irrigators has lodged a Supreme Court claim for $750 million for alleged negligence. The group says negligence caused 850,000 megalitres of water to be wasted rather than being allocated to their properties. The MDBA has declined to comment. A jury in California has awarded more than $2 billion to a couple who say the weed killer Roundup is responsible for their cancer. It's the biggest payout against the company Bayer over the commonly used weed killer Roundup and the third case it's lost. Bayer has confirmed it will appeal against the ruling. And the Greens candidate for the Western New South Wales seat of Parkes has stood down over a social media post where he claimed Martin Bryant didn't commit the Port Arthur massacre. David Paul says he only wrote the comments to gain access to a Facebook group about Port Arthur conspiracy theories. He says he's embarrassed the six-month-old post has been made public, and he does not have any doubt Bryant is guilty of the massacre. The New South Wales Greens say they are satisfied with Mr. Paul's explanation. More news at one.
Thanks, Joanna. You're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour, and it's time to find out what's happening with the weather details. Mohamed Nabi's at the Bureau. Mohamed here at Wingham, I reckon it's sunny, 25 degrees, pretty warm. I imagine that's a similar tale around the state.
It is indeed, Michael. Give or take a couple of degrees here and there. So I think you
here and there, yep.
I think you've got the better end of the deal, Michael, out there. In terms of temperatures, Michael, so what we will start to see from here on is those temperatures will start to edge a little bit higher. And towards the end of the week, we're looking at the mid-20s, at least solidly throughout the western parts of the state, central west slopes and plains, looking at solid mid-20s throughout. What will also start to happen is even now we haven't got sorts of temperatures that will give us widespread frost anywhere by the southwest slopes and plains and the snowy mountains, Michael, so we're not expecting that to get any worse. If anything, those overnight temperatures will start to warm up slightly as well, so we're looking at getting out of frosty conditions even for the southwest slopes and the snowy mountains over the next several days, Michael. Very light wind conditions, so yeah, pretty pleasant, calm conditions, very typical autumn. The only showers that we are getting are confined to the far northeast of the state. Not much expected today, a few showers over the northeast tomorrow and the day after, but nothing over the inland parts, Michael. And I've had a quick look at the outlook going into Sunday and Monday, Michael. It does seem like the next front will give us something over the far west, but at this stage it only looks like it'll be around the single digits in terms of rainfall amounts, Michael. So early days yet, but it doesn't look that exciting. The next front doesn't look exciting at all.
So that comes through, is that, that's towards the end of the 7-day period?
That's right. That's Sunday going into Monday when we'll start to see something over the Lower Western and through the Riverina.
Okay, so that's the one. That's the system we were talking about yesterday. So that's sort of dusting the bottom part of the state and maybe a little bit of the far west.
That's correct, Michael.
Okay, and that's all we can see in terms of anything else on the horizon in terms of the computer modelling at all?
Yeah, so straight after that we get the next ridge of high pressure push in, Michael. So This time next week, we will start to see conditions settling down again, fairly dry, light winds, and temperatures on the mild side.
Okay, so not what we'd like to see, which is another one of those rain fronts coming through.
That's right. Unfortunately, there's nothing that I can see on the horizon, Michael.
No sign like that. Okay, yep. All right. Nothing on the horizon like that. Okay, thanks for that, Mohammed.
Pleasure, Michael.
Mohammed Nabi at the Bureau there. It's coming up to 24 minutes to 1 here on the New South Wales Country Hour. We're broadcasting from Wingham Beef Week. And Michael Kavanagh, one of the most important parts of the Beef Week is actually getting the kids in from the schools. We've got a whole bunch of school kids and teachers here. Maybe you can take us through what they've been doing this week and what the possible outcome, hopeful outcome is for them at the end.
Well, that's right, because we've got, and interesting enough, we've got Narromine High School and Tamworth High School with us at the moment. And the schools go from Narromine, probably the furthest north and west, Dorigo north on the coast, through to the lower North Shore, the leafy suburbs of the lower North Shore in Sydney, with Knox Grammar participating, and then schools in between around Aberdeen, Scone and the Hunter Valley. Narromine, I keep on saying Narromine today, I don't know, it's unusual for me to be tongue-tied, but Megan Marufka is the teacher at Narromine High, and she has come, and it's the second time that Narromine has taken part in it, and with her is Taya Turnbull, and then also have Martin McCabe. I've been mixing his name up all day with Martin, and he has, if I remember correctly, Elizabeth. And they're both in year 11. Now, Megan, Narromine, you've come, it's a 10-hour trip.
Yep.
You've come down with 5 stairs this time?
Yeah, 5 stairs this time.
And last time it was 2. Coming from Narromine, the trip down, that in itself must be a bit of a logistic exercise.
It is at times, and it's just a logistic exercise, especially when the school doesn't have a bus. So we've got to ring around and try and find a bus, and then it was going to cost us $3,000 in transport. And when I heard that, I kind of freaked out a little bit because I'd entered steers. And then I found out that my farmhand has a truck, so we just paid his diesel. So it's a logistic nightmare before you even get in the bus to come down.
And this year, it's a second year for Narromine. You only had 2 steers last year, 5 this year. Narromine, one of the hardest hit areas when it comes to drought. Were there any time during the year you thought, we're not going to be able to do this?
Yeah, definitely. We actually struggled. It took us 3 months to find a decent steer to purchase. We went to the yards and there was 3,000 head of steers in, not one that you could purchase for a show steer. That's just the drought at the moment. We were ringing around for, three months, and I just thought at one point there, I've got to pull the pin. But then you got, 15, 20 kids show up every Wednesday afternoon and they're there for the love of it and you can't give up on them.
Taya, you're in year 11.
Yeah.
And you've raised one of the steers. It's an Angus steer, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
The effort going into it, did you enjoy it at the time?
Yeah, it was great. Totally loved the effort. Like, show team is probably just such a motivation to go to school for a heap of kids. And, like, we all enjoy it so much. And, like, big hats off to Marufka for, like, taking us here and supplying us steers and, like, just being really supportive.
Now, here you are. You're raising an Angus to be shown here at the Wingham Beef Week.
Yeah.
But your background in the family's Dorpers.
Yeah, we run Dorpers on our place. But, yes, we have donated one of the steers that are here today. We've been pretty hardly hit with the drought. We've probably been full-time feeding for 18 months now, and, water's pretty low, really, due to some rain.
And so, therefore, when you sat down and you said to your parents, look, I'd like to go to Wingham Beef Week, and given the fact that you've been feeding full-time, you've got the Dorpers, you're raising a steer for this, at any stage did you think, it's something low that I really shouldn't put on mum and dad?
Yeah, 100%. But God, there's been some such great like charities helping out people in need and stuff like that, especially with the drought. And it's just amazing, like just the support you get from random people you don't even know. Yeah.
Well, standing next to you is Tamworth High School, both student and teacher. Starting with a teacher, and Martin, you came from being raised on a stud, yep. And in fact, your parents showed here at Wingham.
Yeah, they showed here a few years ago now, back in the beginning of the Wingham Beef League competition. And there's still some of our genetics coming through today from the stud, yeah.
And you've gone a circuitous route yourself, which actually shows the kids what they can do, because Wingham Beef Week's also big on not just going back on the farm. You started as a carpenter, you went back to uni, trained as a teacher, now you're doing that. How important is it to get the kids to realise that primary production is broader than just being on the farm?
I feel it's very important. A lot of kids sort of think that primary industry is just being a farmer, where there's so many different roles that people can take in agriculture, through genetics, nutrition, the list is endless. And it's really important that the kids can realise those pathways through agriculture and not just being a farmhand or a property owner, but they can actually go to university and really upskill.
Elizabeth, you're not off a farm, you've got a small holding. And if you could just come a little bit closer, thanks. Coming here, it's the first time for Narromine, for Tamworth High, to be here. When the idea was first floated, what did you think?
I thought it was a really good opportunity to come down here and show like what we can do as a little school with our little holding. And it was really good to be given the opportunity, considering not many people at our school get those kind of opportunities. And so I've come down with a bunch of really great kids and we all really get along. And I've had the chance to meet other people and look into the industry a little bit more than what we get to at school. And it's just been a really good opportunity and it's been really well run so far.
Now I've got to ask you though, probably about 200 metres from where we're standing is the Wingham Meat Processing Plant. You spent all this time nurturing a steer and sooner or later that steer is going to wander off down and be processed. How do you feel about that?
Just life.
That's life.
Doesn't bother me in the slightest, just grown up with it pretty much, you just get used to it.
Megan, the idea here about getting involved with the whole primary production, you're introducing a couple of other things at Narromine High. It's not just the stock, you're going down the aquaponics path.
We are, we're going to implement that just to show that farming isn't just beef and sheep and wheat, and we have got a lot of cotton out our way as well. That's the biggest thing. A lot of kids, they pick ag and they think that they can go down the farm and just brush steers the whole time and whatnot. So we're actually going to introduce aquaponics, probably going to try and run trout in it, and then go from there and produce herbs and lettuce for our food tech department.
Martin, it's the first time for Tamworth, a return run.
Oh, definitely. We'll be back here bigger and bigger next year. I'd just really like to thank the Wingham Beef Week Committee and everything for all their support. I'd also like to give a bit of a plug to Wee Bolla Bolla Shorthorns. They actually set up a charity or a school steer competition here this year, and Tamworth High was lucky enough to get one of those steers. So it's a big support for them by putting up, I think, 12 steers to different schools. And I'd really like to support or say thank you to everyone at Tamworth who's helped us out. Ross and Jan Hahn for their hay. Big support from Lincoln Woods, one of the parents who has tirelessly given up his time to help the kids and help me with the steer preparation. So, no, it's a big help and much appreciated.
Good luck with the rest of the week in the competition.
I was actually going to ask the Tamworth guys, so the Narromine now, they've got the aquaponics. You're going to look at some aquaponics, some trout maybe, and lettuce or something, I don't know, in the future?
Yeah, we're actually looking into that as well, because we're such a small-scale ag farm. We've been looking into small agriculture stuff. We've done broiler chickens at the start of the year, which is a year 11 grow trial. And yeah, we'll probably be looking into aquaponics as well, just because you can do so much with it. You can do the chemistry and biology side of it, which then interlocks with other subjects, and it also locks into history and so forth with the Aztecs and that come up with the idea centuries ago.
So diversification is the aim of the game, by the sound of things. We need a bit more water at Narromine,
yeah,
I reckon.
Definitely, absolutely.
Okay. All right, thanks for joining us on the program today. You're listening to the Country Hour. It's coming up to 1:45. Well, let's
just before we do, Michael, I must say we're standing here, and you look down there, and it's the show ring next to the cattle pavilion, which is going to be demolished in time for next year.
That's right. The pavilion, they want to expand it.
They want to expand, but the show ring, it's just dappled the shade across it in the green. Well, on Thursday, there's going to be an auction, and the Warrigal Stud, and they're auctioning off a Limousin Angus. Now, you recall last year it was a Charolais that was auctioned off, and we happened to be on the day of the auction.
That's right.
And it was timed into the country.
Air,
it was on air. Yeah. And that went for $7,000 last time. This time it's the Warrigal Stud, the Jelfs, the Ralphs, and they're donated their Limousin Angus. Now, I went for $7,000 last year, and Paul Natchenough was talking up this morning when we had him on the Rural Report, and they're hoping, and that money raised from this one, they choose a different charity, and this time round, it's the former Newcastle Knights player Mark Hughes Brain Cancer Foundation. So, lovely setting for the auction on
fantastic.
Thursday.
Yeah, and all the money going to a great cause, so obviously a fantastic idea, that charity auction held every year, and big bucks involved as well. You're listening to the Country Hour. I was just saying, we were talking to the students, and now it's probably a good idea to talk to one of the judges. Kate Johnston is a judge. She joins us now, and you can give us a bit of an idea about how the, well, first of all, generally, the quality that you've seen. How would you characterise it this year?
Look, Wingham, it's my first year this year, but I'm really pleased as punch to be here. You get a few shows and they're a little bit extended or away from some commercial aspects, but Wingham does a fantastic job at not only getting kids into ag and the cattle and the show cattle side of things, but agriculture in general. We're standing here at a table at the moment. We're looking at different types of grasses and feed management. It's phenomenal to be a part of a show and a group of people that have got that understanding to link commercial as well as stud aspects together.
So that's the key, is it? Because it's a so much of its important part of teaching in terms of and learning about all the different aspects, you think that you can actually see that in the cattle here, you can see that in what the kids are doing?
Yeah, I think when it comes to the fundamentals of a bit of longevity and actually starting careers in agriculture, linking some of these some of the fun show things to actual commercial industries is really important, and talking to the teachers and how this program fits into their curriculums is particularly important, and I suppose makes it a more valuable show than some others can be.
More valuable than others because it has the educational aspect, and you've got the youngsters, they're keen as well?
Yeah, to be honest, it seems like an awesome show, whether you're getting started or whether you're an older student coming back into it. It seems like it's got something that really is of value to anyone participating.
Something for everyone. And in terms of, so you were saying first time here, so where else have you been? Have you done the judging, and what's the difference you've seen?
I've judged at a few other events, Hereford and other breed groups, as well as going up to Rockhampton and Scone over the last year. I suppose just the way that they link commercial and educational together is really important, and actually keeping kids in ag in general, because while I've grown up in beef and cropping, it doesn't matter what you get into, as long as you get into it and you stay it and you love what you're doing, really.
You've got to be a star, and it's important thing about any job, you've got to love what you're doing, and it makes it easy, then it doesn't seem like a job.
Exactly. If you stop loving it, there's no sense in doing it, really.
Okay, well, I'll let you get back to it, and you've got a formidable task to determine the winners here this week, so good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Country Hour. We're going to markets shortly on the program, but before we do that, let's talk to Jonty, who, again, we were talking to the chef, Michael Kavanagh, who was here at Wingham, started out at Wingham, headed away to learn his craft, and similar story with Jonty here.
Jonty went through the high school here. She went through, if I remember correctly, the whole part of Wingham Beef Week, and then Jonty has gone on to UNE, where she's doing ag science, but she's doing it online, and at the same time has gone in and is working for Wingham Beef Exports. Not on the floor, you're applying your economic and ag skills. Jonty, when you went through and started doing the Wingham Beef Week, did you actually think, because obviously you had your eye on university, did you think you'd have to leave Wingham, A, to go to uni, and then to be employed accordingly?
Yeah, most likely. Like, my original plan when I was at high school was mainly just to sort of finish high school and go to Armidale and do uni for a solid 4 years and come out with a degree and then think about a job after. But I was really lucky in the regard that I was asked to have a gap year at Wingham Beef, and from there I've just held on and haven't left, so I'm stuck.
Did you realise, though, even then, as you say, you were thinking of uni and you're probably thinking, I've got to look wider, and thinking that, oh, look, what could I, how could I apply my degree and other tertiary skills? Did you realise that there was something like that at Wingham Beef Exports?
Yeah, that's always sort of occurred to me, yeah, but I was probably just lucky enough that I was actually offered a position, so it can be quite hard to find jobs, I think, but I've been pretty lucky that I've had the support I have had, and I can definitely see how the degree fits in with the beef industry world and how it works. So, no, it's been really good to try and apply some of those things I'm learning at university.
Well, it's always important to have that practical understanding as well as having the theoretical, isn't it? So I guess that's where you're in the box seat.
Oh, yeah, I think the work experience is definitely, I believe, way more valuable than the uni degree. I believe the uni degree is basically just a piece of paper to back it up, but the work experience is really invaluable, I'd say, so.
Well, we won't be telling the Chancellor that you've been saying
that. Now, talking about and other parts of college, you went to the intercollegiate in Japan recently, a meet intercollegiate. Tell me more.
So the Intercollegiate Meat Judging Association of Australia run a Japan industry tour for individuals like myself who are either A, in the beef industry or looking to be in the beef industry and want to learn some more about cultural habits globally. So we have to submit an essay and an application and stuff like that, and then the 40 applicants, I got selected as one of the top five and was able to go to Japan and view how the beef industry and red meat industry works over there. So it was quite an eye-opener for me, and definitely broadened my cultural horizons in the regard of the way that other people do things and how they process meat and just their cuisine habits as well. So.
Quite incredible and amazing experience, and we've run out of time. We've got to head to Marcus. Jonty, thanks for that.
No worries, thank you very much.
You're listening to The Country Hour. It's time for markets.
Thank you for tuning in.
That's right. Oh, good.
$64. $7.50. $60. Right, now let's go to Wodonga Cattle, Leandax.
Numbers at Barnawatha declined to just over 600 odd cattle. Quality was plain, with cattle showing the effects of the season. Trade cattle are few and heavy export cattle are also in short supply. Lightweight veal sold from $2 to $2.18. The pick of the veal, which were few, $3.15 to $3.19. Trade steers, $2.70 to $3.25, dipping 6 cents. Feeder steers fell back 15, $2.32 to $2.89. Restocking weaner steers sold up to 30 cents cheaper, $1.88 to $2.50. Trade heifers gained 9 cents, $2.43 to $3.18. The best of the heavy steers and bullocks were firm to 4 cents better. Prices range from $2.55 to $3.12. Manufacturing steers $1.70 to $2.26. Frisian steers $1.80 to $2.26. I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
To Forbes Sheep and Lambs now, Crystal Ridley.
Good afternoon. Numbers ease slightly this summer with agents yarding 28,750 head, 22,250 lambs penned. Quality was similar to previous sales, with good numbers of finished lambs on offer. The usual buyers are present competing in a firm to dearer market. Light lambs reached 145. Trade weights were firm to $4 better, with the 18 to 20 kilo portion from 150 to 166, 20 to 22 kilo from 162 to 189. Heavy and extra heavy weights were well supplied and sold $4 to $5 dearer. Heavy lambs to 26 kilos ranging from 180 to 217, while those over 26 kilos sold from 223 to 270. Carcass prices averaged from 765 to 799 cents a kilo. Trade and heavyweight merino lambs sold from 150 to 205, and the balance of the lambs and 6,500 head of mutton are still to be sold. This has been Crystal Ridley at Forbes from LA.
Carcor Cattle and David Monk.
Good afternoon. Numbers remain fairly similar with a yarding of 3,560. It was a pretty good quality yarding with a good selection of young feeder cattle along with some well-finished trade cattle and ground steers. Cows made up around 30% of the yarding. Young cattle of a trade were 15 cents cheaper, with prime yearlings selling from 260 to 294. Feeder steers and heifers were 10 to 13 cents cheaper. The feeder steers sold from 250 to 316, while the feeder heifers sold from 215 to 276. Young cattle of the restockers were up to 25 cents cheaper, with the young steers selling from 200 to 260, while the young restocker heifers sold from 189 to 226. Brown steers were 8 cents dearer, with the prime, medium and heavyweight selling from 250 to 306. Paying conditioned cows were 4 to 8 cents cheaper, while the properly finished cows were 15 cents cheaper. 1 and 2 score cows sold from 80 to 169, while the better 3 and 4 scores sold from 152 to 228, with the brown heavyweights averaging 204. Bulls sold to 229. This is David Monk at CTLX for MLA.
Gunnedah Cattle, James Armitage.
Good afternoon. There was a sharp increase in numbers that saw 2,420 head penned, cows and young cattle mostly. Quality was fair to good, however, there were very few well-finished cattle available. The regular buyers were in attendance. Competition and demand was not as strong. Cheaper trends for the most part. In the young cattle, buyers showed a preference for more weight and condition regardless of shape, with big discounts applied for too light and too lean. One score steer viewers to restockers 164 to 233, two scores 210 to 273, the heifer portion 140 to 182 and 172 to 246 cents respectively. The best of the feeder steers were only slightly cheaper, significantly cheaper the plainer cattle, medium and heavyweight 220 to 299. Heavy yearlings saw a much cheaper trend, all classes, with medium weight feeders 227 to 245. Cows also much cheaper apart from a few going to feed. 1 and 2 scores 50 to 190, with 3 and 4 scores 150 to 222 cents a kilo. James Armitage for MLA in Gunnedah.
Inverell Cattle, Stephen Adams.
Good afternoon. Inverell numbers increased to 2,595 cattle, 350 more, with cows still in the majority at over 1,000 head. Young cattle well supplied, mostly plainer quality, however still offering well-finished pens of grain-assisted cattle, all processed. Processes operating on a restricted slaughter basis. A lot of cows going to feed along with restocker interest. Like restocker weaners seeing cheaper trends of 25 to 30 cents, 186 to 241, quality related. Light yearling steers to restock 25 cents back 190 to 278. Medium steers 25 cents easier 200 to 265. Light heifers substantially cheaper 136 to 195. Medium heifers to feed up to 45 cents back 180 to 214. While trade heifers sold 253 to 262. Grown heifers sold 168 to 210. Restockers were strong on the light one score cows 22 to 145 cents. Two score cows selling to cheaper trends of 15 to 20 cents, 124 to 180. The better cows saw falls of 30 cents a kilo, mostly quality affected, 165 to 195. Bulls to 250. Stephen Adams, MLA at Inverell.
Scone Cattle, Neil Geddes.
Afternoon. Numbers lifted by 80 for 722, mainly younger cattle. Quality feeder good. Little joy for the producers today. The younger draft's considerably cheaper by as much as 20 to 40 cents a kilogram. 200 kilogram plus feeder steers to the restockers 168 to 280 cents. Same weight heifer portion 172 to 244 cents a kilogram. Yearling steers to feed 190 to 277. Better finished pens defy the cheaper trend and sold close to firm 271 to 294 cents a kilogram. Yearling heifers to feed and restock of 160 to 258 cents. Big discounts for the prime pens to the butchers, the best at 285 cents a kilogram. Prime heavyweight boards to slaughter reach 240, heifers 225 cents. Cows cheaper by 5, the better finished medium weights 170 to 205. Heavyweights 180 to 206 cents. Neil Geddes, Scone Cattle for the MLA.
Thanks, Neil. And Michael Cavanagh, we're going to get our skates on. We're meeting up with Kim Honan because we're heading to Kingscliff, farm to plate, and more about food.
And one of the great subjects in life, and then also casino and Primex.
Exactly. So we've got plenty of work ahead of us as we head out and outside broadcasts here on the Country Hour. It's heading up to news time.